Good evening, everybody. This is your host, Annie Cipetta, for Behind Our Eyes. And tonight is a book launch with poet and author Lisa Bush.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. And I thank Ona for being willing to interview me. That's wonderful. And I thank you for all the guests that are here and everyone in the writing group. And now I will turn over to Ona to read my bio, and then I will be back with you.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, everyone. So I'm going to read Lisa's bio, though I'm sure many of you know Lisa and her accomplishments. Lisa Bush lives in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with her cockatiel, Coconut. She enjoys hearing about her daughter Jackie's world-traveling experiences, playing Scrabble with Debbie and Linda, and attending concerts and the theater. Besides this book, which is Close Calls, Lisa has written poetry, children's stories, lyrics, and melodies to many songs. She has published a few pieces in Magnets and Ladders, an internet magazine produced by Behind Our Eyes, and her poems often appear in Bush Hill Presbyterian Church's newsletter.
Okay, thank you. And now I am going to, since it's Poetry Month, I am going to read two poems from the book. The first one is rather gloomy, but I wanted to read it because it sort of sets the tone for the beginning of the book when I am sad. And it'll show the difference that happens later on. So the first poem is called Like I Am. I am like a dead room fastened to a living house. Nailed to squalor, I remain dirty, silent, chilled. All around me, echoes leap, spiders whisper, doorknobs dance away. I am like a barren tree hanging in a fruitful orchard. Dressed in nothing, I exist solid, heavy, thick. All around me, branches beckon, daisies flourish, diamonds glint in sand. I am like a cold snowflake, victim of the bully sun. Found by darkness, I appear shadowed, weary, lost. All around me, stars play, birds float, death is voted king. But shortly thereafter, I marry Jerry. Then I wrote another poem that's much better. So it's called Husband. I love you a new way, flight without wings. The heart soaring in rings of wonder, light and thunder without the fear. How sweet and clear. I love you, the old wind stroking each tree, probing each sea with an infinite song. How simple and strong the bonds are, points of a star. Okay, that's the end of the poetry segment. And now Ona can ask me questions.
I am happy to. So I'm going to start by asking about a particular aspect of the book that it's really unusual. In fact, it's something I've never encountered before in memoir, which is that you bring other voices into the story. Different chapters are told by different figures, your parents, your friends, love interests, your husband, both in life and afterwards, your daughter. But there's also chapters by acquaintances, like a classmate we only meet once, and probably most surprising of all, the bacteria affecting your husband, Jerry, at the time of his amputation due to diabetes. I'm wondering how it came to you to include these different voices in your story.
Well, in the beginning, the first scene that I wrote was from the unseen narrator, or he's called different things. It's really God's point of view. And the writing coach that I had at the time thought that the book would be written in that voice. And we tried it for a while, but it just didn't work. And then, due to unforeseen circumstances, I couldn't work with that writing coach anymore. And then I just started experimenting. And I wrote the scene from my parents' point of view, but I was imagining their spirits talking rather than their normal voices. And that intrigued me. So it just kind of set me up for thinking, well, I could write from different points of view. I also think that because of my blindness, especially when I was younger, I kind of felt so much apart from everyone. Like, I didn't realize suffering was happening as much to other people because people set me apart, and so I thought I was different. And so when I realized that that was the case, I wanted other people's points of view in my book, and I wanted people to get a rest from my struggles. And
Oh,
see that
interesting.
other people were struggling too. I also, because Jerry's point of view is often so refreshing, I wanted that to be a part of the book.
In your
Oh,
note to the reader. Oh, sorry, did I cut you
I just wanted to say that the bacteria
off?
speaking was written when I was really depressed after Jerry's death.
Oh, sure. What struck me when I re read that segment was only a poet would think to do this. So, in your note to the reader, you say that using these various points of view helped you consider your life with a wider lens. And most often, these other narrators are actually interacting with you, with the Lisa of the story. Or at least they're thinking about you. And I was wondering if you interviewed them to get this intimate knowledge of how they felt about you and your shared experiences. And if there are other ways that you work to deepen your understanding of your role in their lives.
No, I didn't interview anyone. I had Jerry's voice on some tapes, cassette tapes, and so some of the things he says were on those tapes. But I imagined what people felt by what they said to me and how they acted with me, and sort of. Especially, it was important to understand certain people's points of view, like my mother's, for instance. When I was growing up, I didn't understand her point of view, but I wanted to show her possible point of view in the book. And also, I wanted to show, that my brother Kevin was just probably just as lonely, if not more so, than I was, but I was kind of not as aware of that as I, should have been. I also wanted to show Gil's point of view during our breakup, so that it wouldn't be just me. And he was alive then and never disagreed with what I had written. So, because he read the book, really. He was very supportive of it.
Oh, that's wonderful. It sounds like doing it this way was a real exercise in empathy.
I tried.
Well, on the page, you certainly succeed.
Thank you.
So one of the strengths in your writing, to my mind, as a sighted reader, is your ability to viscerally convey the experience of blindness. Early on, when we meet you as a small child, it's in the kinds of details that you bring forth, like the swishing and whispers of your taffeta dress. And later, as a young woman, it's in your sensual descriptions of a lover's touch. And so my question is, did you consciously make an effort to convey what it's like to perceive the world as a blind person? or was that a happy side effect of writing vivid description? And I'm also wondering if you have advice for writers who hope to achieve this in their own prose.
No, I did not attempt to, write as a blind person. In fact, I was always nervous about writing a setting. I'm not very good at describing a room or a person's experience or whatever, but I knew that touch and sound was where I could come alive. And that's where I think to help other writers to find what makes them come alive. And then, after they figure that out, write in that way.
Makes a lot of sense. So the book is made up of many short chapters, some even as short as a prose poem. And it's also a mix of large formative life experiences and small daily moments. And, as I found that in writing memoirs, sometimes it's really difficult to know what to put in and what to leave out of the story. And so I was wondering if you could say something about how you made those decisions.
Well, I read a book on writing, and one of the things they said was to list all the scenes you can think of. So I put them on file cards, without looking, and I just, wrote all the ones I could remember. And I left a few out that I didn't remember. And so it was like, well, are they important? Maybe not, and also, I left out a couple scenes that would, hurt family members, and my second editor, Sally, requested a scene about my brother Kim, which I put in there. But I wanted to put scenes to set up the loss, scenes that showed Jerry's patience, scenes that showed the spiritual help I was receiving, scenes that questioned my point of view at times. And scenes that showed my mourning but displayed Jerry's voice inside me. So all of those aspects kind of helped me figure out what scenes to keep and what scenes to not display.
Right. So, like me, you came to memoir with a background in poetry, and it's really evident in the lyricism in your writing, particularly in the childhood chapters, in the sensuous way you write about sexual awakening, and in beautiful lines like, I'm like a bag of dead leaves he believes will fasten themselves back on trees. And then this next one is another favorite of mine, though now that I know that you were working from tapes with Jerry, of Jerry's voice, maybe this came from him because he does say it in the book. The space between you and me is a concert hall where no one sings anymore. It's beautiful. But having done this myself, having been a poet who then chose to write memoir, I struggled with the demands of writing in this new expanded form. And I'm wondering if there was anything that you found hard about working on such a large project in prose.
Yes, especially in the beginning, I thought it was all going to be prose, and I was trying to study how to write prose and all this kind of thing. But I couldn't stop the poetic voice in my head. So I just decided, because some people shy away from poetry, so I just decided to write everything in paragraphs, but sort of pretend it was poetry at the same time. So I sort of have both worlds. And I played around with the order of the scenes. And sometimes it just felt like a wild beast I couldn't tame.
Oh boy, I can relate.
But eventually it just became clearer what I was doing. It took so long to figure out the format of the book. Once I finally figured that out, it worked better. But it took a long time.
This book also uses techniques that are more common to fiction writers, like imagining those various points of views, as we talked about. And also the choice to use this present tense immersion that really gives readers the experience of living life along with you, rather than, I'd say, a more traditional memoir that weaves reflection, memory, and meaning making. And I'm curious as to what led to that choice, what influenced that choice.
Well, I wanted to show my growth as a person, and present tense just seemed to work better. Also, Jerry's voice just seemed too far away in the past.
Oh,
I felt like
interesting.
everyone was more with me in the present tense. I didn't want anyone to know what happened with Gil and my relationship too soon. I wanted the revelations to appear more sudden rather than, oh, I just figured this out, because I'm a lot older. So I think that's why I wrote. It seems more immediate, and especially when I was writing so much emotional information, I think present tense worked the best. I tried to write, with flashbacks, but it just fell flat,
Yeah, you could sense when you got it right. What memoirs, novels, and poetry most influenced you in the writing of this book?
I really like Harper Lee. I like the whole idea of making a work accessible but extraordinary. I also like the musical sounding of poets like Emily Dickinson and Keats. So I think that those writers probably in influenced me more than anyone else.
I was struck by the appearance of Jerry's voice as one that was internal to you after he died, and by the assertion he makes at that time that he now lives inside of you. It seems to have deepened and solidified your spiritual and religious life. Can you speak to us a bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. That is true. When he was dying, he said, "I'm ready to die," and I said, "But I, but I won't be able to talk to you anymore." And he said, "Well, tell God what to say, what you want to say, and He'll tell me." And I said, "But I won't be able to hear your answer." And so when I had that sort of a revelation in the taxi on the way home after he died, when I could hear his voice so exuberantly in my mind about how he was happy that he didn't have to suffer anymore. It just felt like the door between life and death had opened. And for me, that was a miracle because I had been so traumatized by my childhood, and the death of my grandfather and my mother's religious speaking, preaching, whatever. And so after Jerry died, and I would write, I wrote letters to Jerry, and I, could hear him talking back to me, not in his physical voice, but in sort of a more spiritual voice. And sometimes it really surprised me what I was hearing because I was very depressed at the time. And because I was so afraid of loss, I don't think I completely felt my love for Jerry when he was alive. So that after he died, I felt this feeling of infatuation almost. It was just like this, like how wonderful he was, and how, and what was I supposed to do with that now? So So I feel like it all helped me. It helped me too in when it came to my relationship with Gil, to be able to hear his voice in my head too.
To still hear Jerry's voice or to hear Gil's voice as well.
I don't hear them like I did, you know, when he first died or whatever, but I can if I think about it. There was that one there was one part in the book in which, in fact, it happened on Jackie's birthday, that he was unconscious and he squeezed my hand when I was crying. And I felt like it was a sign that that was the way I would feel connected to him after he died. And I did feel that whenever I was upset or whatever, I would imagine him holding my hand. And that also helped me. It, you know, it didn't stop the mourning or anything, but, you know, it was something that it helped.
Yeah, I imagine writing him and spending that time with him as he wrote this book
Yes,
was
yes,
healing. Yeah.
yes.
I'm wondering about the title, Close Calls. What meaning or meanings are behind that title?
Well, I think it encompasses the danger of health scares, you know, like all of his medical issues. It's the fear that threatened spiritual death, you know, with when I was a child and all that. But it was also close calls from the Holy Spirit, from Jerry's love, even from my mom watching me when I was in the river. Sort of all this feel, always this feeling was anyone really caring? Was anyone watching? Was anyone, you know, close enough to hear me?
That's lovely.
So it had both those ideas about it.
There anything that we didn't talk about that you would like to?
Just the whole God element of the thing, sort of the whole how interesting it was that God showed up so quietly at first, and then kept sort of nudging me on, even though I wasn't really ready to hear his voice, with the, you know, the whole part about my mom thinking my illness was all in my head, and I heard this voice saying, they don't believe it. I was the son of God either. And I was like, wait, I can't be like God in any way. I don't even know if I believe in him, you know, kind of thing. And then the candle in the church where I felt this warmth inside my chest. I mean, it was actually a warmth inside my chest. It was weird, even though I was holding the candle outside. And, you know, just the whole, the minister saying, maybe you have the, I'm mistaken. A mistaken image of who God is. It was also sort of gentle. It got to be different, but it started out that way, almost like you could miss it, you know. And I think it could happen to everyone that is able to hear.
It sounds like gentle was the way that you could hear it.
I think that's about it.
Should we open the floor, see if other
Sure.
people have questions for you?
Sure.
Hey everyone, it's Annie. Ona, some wonderful questions, and Lisa, some wonderful answers. It's made me ponder how God is in my life and how I recognized the messages. They did come gently. They didn't bash me over the head either. So I just wanted to let you know that. So if anybody wants to ask a question, You can raise your hand, and you can raise your hand with Alt Y on a PC, and Option Y on a Mac. The raise hand button on your phone should be in the bottom row of tabs. Sometimes it's under the More or Options menu, depending on what version phone you have. And if you're on a landline, it is star 9. So we're going to take your hands if you have any questions.
Well, for there. Here's a hand, Keisha.
How long did it take you to write it?
That is a really funny question. Well, before Jerry died, which was in, he died in 1993, I knew the title of the book was going to be Close Calls. I didn't know that the Voices of Love and Fear was going to be part of the title, but I knew the title. So I knew I was going to write a book, but lots of stuff happened. It took a long time. It didn't get published till this year, so I can't really answer that question because there were times in which I wasn't writing the book. Things were interfering, life got in the way. I had to completely start over again once because my real device erased what I had, and
Oh,
I hadn't backed it up, which was a
that's so
terrible
painful.
mistake. Yes. And so it took a very long time, but it's done. Hallelujah.
Carol's hand is up.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, dear.
Okay. I'm going along with that last little bit. Alisa, how long actually did your memoir take? Because many of us are trying to do memoirs and it does seem it's taking forever. So could you elaborate a little on that, on how long and how many breaks did you take and such? By the way, thank you for this. It's a very interesting night.
Thank you. It's really a hard question to answer because there were so many. Like first, I was trying to write in the voice of God, so I had to stop doing that. There was a time in which I didn't have my writing coach or anyone helping me edit the book, so that was happening. There was things going on with my. I went to school, and that interfered with it too. So I can't really answer that question in a way that will satisfy you. I'm sorry.
Deborah's hand is up. Deborah Thompson.
Okay.
And Ona, very good interview. I wanted to know, was this very cathartic for you? I've done a memoir as well, and in my writing of that, I went through and just even reliving some of the things that I talked about, even though I did it in a some of the characters fictionally, but they were true things that happened, but I cried through some of it, I laughed through some of it, I got angry again through some of it, but it helped me, maneuver through all of the different things that I was writing about. So did you find that it was very cathartic and helped you to even I haven't read your book yet and I do intend to, but even some of the things you talk about with your mom and some of your family situations, did it help you
Swipe up to unlock
go through some of
Yes, it did. It was hard. It was a hard book to write because there were so many hard things that happened. Jerry's illness was difficult. He had to keep going to the hospital and get surgeries, and he almost died a couple times, and you know, there was a lot of plus my childhood was hard for me because I was afraid of death and my mother's religion, and I was away from school, away at school. Yes, but I think that was another reason why it took me so long to write the book, because it was hard to go through all this stuff all over again.
I can really relate to that.
I think Nell had her hand up.
Yes, she did. She's the next one.
Lisa, thank you very much for a wonderful talk. Ona, thank you for the interview. I wanted to ask, because the memoir I have in my mind, and I've already started it, like, God, years and years ago, has like a theme kind of running through it. So I wonder, would you say there's a theme running through your memoir? And, you know, what lesson do you think you want your audience to learn from that theme?
I think the theme that's running through the memoir has to do with dealing with loss and knowing when you're loved and being able to accept love that is different from when you expect it to be. And also the, you know, the God is with us. You know, one of my biggest struggles was going away to school from my parents, and it took me like 5 years to get used to being away at school. But it was the best thing for me to go to that school. So even though I didn't always know what was good for me, and what was good for me sometimes was very hard for me. So I think I might have gone past that question, but I think, you know, some of that was the theme too.
Okay, Marlene has her hand up.
Okay.
I want to say, oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was late getting here. I just got here like about the Q&A part. But I do want to say that I saw we had 38 people, and that is the most we have ever had at a book launch. That's a record. And Lisa, congrats. And I wanted to ask, did you talk about your poetry book at all? And if not, would you? Thank you.
No, I didn't talk about my poetry book. I do have a poetry book called Conquering Silence, and it's on Amazon, and it's small. It's a very small book, but it talks about my relationship with Gil, and that's about all I can say about it.
Okay, we don't have any more hands, but I've been reading your book. I haven't quite reached the end of it yet, but I'm very impressed, Lisa. It flows beautifully. It captures the reader and holds it. And I, too, have been playing around with memoir for most of my life because I write a lot of sketches and commentary that is part of the stuff that wanders around my hand. Oh, good. We've got a hand up. So I'll keep this short. I was just going to say that I admire your courage in getting yours done. And like you, one of the things I waited for was for my mother to pass, because I know some of the things that she didn't know would hurt her. And I've got a brother that I probably will recommend doesn't read it, because he's an extremely gentle soul. And he found my my sort of semi-memoir first book of 50 years of walking with friends hard to read because of some of the hard times my dogs have helped me get through. So anyway, kudos. And we have a hand up, Gracie McCabe. Grace McCabe, sorry, didn't mean to make a diminutive out of your name.
There we go. I had to unmute myself. Lisa, it's great to see you. Nice to see you. It's been too long.
Right, right.
I read your book. I couldn't put it down. It was so fascinating. And to me, it really, I know you and I know a lot of these stories, or some of them anyway, but it read really like a novel. And I was just wondering, a really good novel. I was wondering if you were going to put it with another publishing company, a big one that would make it more available to people.
No, I hadn't really planned on doing anything else with it. I'm not sure anybody else would take it because it's unusual, and I don't really want to edit it again. I'm afraid that if I tried to give it to a publisher, they would want me to edit some more, and I don't really want to do that anymore. It took me so long to write it. I'm done. I don't want to do any more editing. So,
Lisa, how can people find your book?
Well, it is on Amazon. It's on Smashwords. It's on Apple Books. And if you have any trouble finding it, just let me know because I have the link to the book. I think I'm going to try to get a website where I can put links to the book on the website. But I haven't worked on doing that yet. I'm also, thanks to my friend Debbie Hill, who is here, I am reading the book for Bard. So it should be available for Bard in the next few months. So that's exciting. And maybe we can get it on Bookshare too.
Lisa, this is Annie. Could you share a little bit about your experience reading on Bard, reading your own book, the process maybe, and you know, your experience so far?
Well, Debbie is editing my book, and she can talk a lot more about what it's like to edit it, but she listens to me read, and then if I don't say a word quite right or whatever, she might say to me, "Say that again," or I have to stop and say, "Repeat," or some word like that when I make a mistake, so that's easier for her to edit the book. And we are in the Jerry part of the book now, so that's exciting. But it's going to take a while because it takes a while to edit it.
Yeah.
I'm here if you want me to comment. Debbie.
Oh, hey, Debbie. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's it been like editing your friend's book?
it is something. She is very good at reading it. I mean, it just, and she's such a trooper. She can sit in there and she sits in this little soundproof booth with the door closed, and she can do she's done up to 2 hours at a time in there. And I keep stopping and going, "Do you want to go on?" "Oh yeah, I want to go on." So it is quite a process. We're at the library, one of the network libraries are in Pittsburgh, and that has a complete recording studio with two really nice booths. And well, the process goes like this: they set the book up, they get it onto Bard. It's been registered with Bard, but and then we record it. I monitor as she's recording. In fact, they're really fascinated at the library because she's in there using a chameleon and I'm using a mantis outside to follow along. And everybody thinks this may be a first. So if anybody else hears of one that's being done like that, And then I start the editing process. It really is for any book. It's the editing takes a long time. You could, I on my top speed, I can do 5 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes an hour. So it really takes much longer. So Lisa's few months in Bard is probably being a little optimistic.
Okay,
But
all right.
yeah, but anyway, we'll do it. One of the things that makes her book really interesting to edit is because she is using a Braille display and we get a little bit of the clicking in the background. But I've been able to take, you probably won't hear that on the recording once we get it done. So it's a really good project. She's a real trooper and she reads very well.
Well, I'm very happy that you're doing it. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that, ladies. I really appreciate that. I think we have a couple more hands before we get ready to wrap up. Who has their hand
Leonard.
raised? Leonard.
Oh, okay. I didn't think my thing was working. I'm wondering, do you have any residue of the fear of death?
I'm more afraid of dying than, the process of dying rather than death. I'm not afraid of death anymore. I don't really want to be in pain or go through dementia, like everybody else.
Well, thank you.
Okay, next up is Sally.
Okay, Lisa, I've read your poetry book, but not your memoir yet. I'm looking forward to it. I'm wondering, now that the memoir's done and you've stepped away from it, is there anything that you wish you had put in it that's not there?
I found some mistakes that I wish I could correct. But no, I don't think so.
Okay, thanks.
Pat Smith.
Pat, you're muted. I was muted when I started to say
Thank you.
that to
I'm sorry. I also read, what did I just say? The
you. You
poetry.
also,
Yes, first.
oh.
And really loved it and felt like it made me feel so much closer to you
Yeah,
because so
yes.
much of you was in that poetry. I'm about
Right.
halfway through Close Calls, and again, feel like it just there's a closeness that I didn't feel like I had before, even though I had known you. And
Yeah.
so, as someone else mentioned, it brought me into this whole other world of being able to understand a little better about what it is to be blind. Because obviously, if you've never been blind, you don't know what that is. You see people from the outside. And I think and one of the things I appreciated was your being able to differentiate between the kinds of blindness, the way people became blind, and so forth. I found that interesting. I was also wondering if you have another book in you. Is something else coming out?
Not right away. I am working. The person who helped me work on the Close Calls book, Sally, I am working with her on a Christian poetry book right now. So we'll see how that goes. I also have a lot of children's stories that I don't know what to do with. I would like to put them on YouTube with pictures, but I haven't found anyone who would collaborate with me yet.
Oh,
And I
Dan
just want to say
Simpson
that,
has
what?
got his Dan has his hands
Oh,
raised.
okay.
Dan Simpson, yes.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so
Hi.
much. I have a memoir that I've been working on for a good while, and I came from it as a poet. I'm wondering, let's see, looking back, what do you wish you knew when you started that you know now and about writing memoir? And how do you feel it's changed you as a writer?
Well, I definitely wish I had known in the beginning what format I wanted to write the book in, and that I wanted to write it in different points of view. That would have saved me a lot of time. Sorry, what's your second question?
How has it changed you
Oh,
as a writer, if it has?
I think that
And maybe as a person, as well.
yeah, I think that writing it has freed me more as a writer and as a person. I feel not as unwilling to uncover difficult subjects. I feel freer in just in how to express myself. Which is what I did a lot in the poetry book that Pat was mentioning.
Well, I'm interested to hear all that because I know there are a number of poets. Ona and I just came back from the AWP conference, and we went to a panel on poets by poets who have moved into memoir. And I know that the big structure for many of us has been a challenge after coming from little poems.
Yes, it was daunting. Yes, absolutely.
Oh. Well, thank you for putting all the work into it,
Thank you.
making the book, and good luck with it.
Thank you.
We have no more hands.
Well, if we're ready to close, I can read you the last two poems that I have.
Well, that would be wonderful. Yeah.
Okay, this is called Sharing Martha's Vineyard with Jerry. And I will say that my mom was the one that gave me the idea for this poem because she said that she could see the waves in the sky meeting. So, okay. If I can see the lullaby waves meet the sky in a blanket of blue, heaven is not so far away, and I am still quite close to you. If wind can turn chimes to song, surprising the ear with bell chords of peace, wonderful memories will ring through the mind, tuned by love that will not cease. If storms can throw boulders through the air, changing their beauty as well as their place, we can be torn apart by this pain, broken, but with a familiar face. It is our God who takes such care to keep us together when time we can't share. And the last poem I'm going to read you, I wrote this. Jerry died in May, and I wrote this poem in August, but I could not do what this poem is saying that I thought I could do. It's called Rehearsal. You are where the hyacinths sing, or perhaps where Chopin chords a nocturnal hydrangea. I am still in earthly rehearsal, hitting wrong notes and missing you. Tell me, though, that we are not strangers. Tell me when the wood thrush calls and I catch my breath, that I know one word of the that I know one word with poor, I'm sorry, one word of heaven speak with poor pronunciation. Once we rhymed in desolation, shall I perfect that piece or wail from half my heart now that you are gone? Time lingers on while you shimmer live with light. And I want to be with you tonight. So I shall gather every strand of clumsy art and weave it in with mountains, fountains, and dandelions. Perhaps I'll learn a word or two to greet you at the door. odd silence, my encore. Thank you all so much for being here.
This is Annie Chepeta. Before we close, we'd like you to know that this recording will be up on the Behind Our Eyes website under book launch opportunities with all of our other book launches. We hope you listen to this again if you were here, or listen it to the first time if you missed this recording. And thank you so much for coming. And Behind Our Eyes appreciates your patronage and your attention and your caring words and writing. Good night, everyone.
Good night.